It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Some great conversations ahead for you. We'll talk about the mess at Uber, but also how to know what's really true. Jeff and Gina and I are next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 276, recorded November 19th, 2014. Don't be Uber. This Week in Google is brought to you by SmartThings. SmartThings lets you control and monitor your home from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. To get started, visit smartthings.com/twit, and you'll save 10% off any home security or solution kit when you use the code TWIT10 at checkout. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. Now introducing Squarespace 7 with even better site management tools and other improvements. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers Google, the Googleverse, Google Cloud, all the other clouds that are puffing along right next to the Google Cloud. Oh, wait a minute. That one's a vape cloud. Ignore that one. Also, Facebook and Twitter. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Gina Trapani of thinkup.com.
Hello.
Good to have you, Gina.
She's also good to be here.
Host of All About Android.
Oh, yeah.
Tuesday night. Network every Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. We make her work right in the middle of the week. Jeff Jarvis is back home where the snow, how has it come up to the windows yet, Jeff?
I'm not in Buffalo, thank goodness. The East Coast is not all the same.
Yes, it is.
I think Gina should put her hoodie over her head since she's freezing.
Both of you, I think.
It is freezing here. This is why I have my like fuzzy muzzy hoodie on here because.
Wow, that's cute.
Is that a Uniqlo hoodie?
It's cold.
You look so adorable in that.
I think this was like a Sam's Club special. My mother-in-law gave it to me. It's great. It's so warm.
You really understand when you're walking around in you know, sub-freezing weather why warm weather gear is so important.
Yes. Yes, I'm being re-reminded after. I was kind of in denial about the winter because I moved back last winter. I was like, oh, this is a weird freak thing. Now I'm like, oh, we committed to this. This is going to be a seasonal thing.
And it's really February that you really start hating it. November, this is nothing.
I was like, it's not even December yet today. That's what I was saying. I was saying to a friend, it's not even December. What is this? Wrong.
Stay inside, stay warm, be toasty.
It's going to be 65 this weekend.
Oh, good.
Because I now feel like my parents talking about the weather.
I know. I know. I know. Let's talk about Uber.
Ooh.
Oh, boy. Oh,
at first, I wasn't gonna, but now I feel like I have to.
Let's do it. Let's do this.
It's phenomenal. Jesus, what a story!
It's kind of
depressing to me that it's only become a huge story once it affected journalists.
Yeah, typical, isn't it? It's like Gamergate. Yeah. As soon as you attack the journalist, now we got a story, man. So Uber has always been pretty aggressive, and I think in some regard, this is just kind of a peek inside the startup culture, which can tend to be. Not only a boys club, but an aggro boys club, you know, really
obnoxious.
And, you know, little bits leak through the programmer and all of that stuff. But really, and I'm not familiar with it because I don't hang out with VCs or with startups or anything. Maybe, Jeff, I think you do a little bit more. Gina, you're in a startup. Is this kind of aggressive culture that we're seeing here with Uber kind of typical?
Uber's just like the darling, you know, of the valley. And there is this whole sort of like undercurrent of like growth hacking and, you know, hustle and this sort of, I don't know, this idea that you just stop at nothing to succeed. And, you know, the Uberization of everything. I mean, Uber has become this weird synonym. For me, I feel like it's a synonym for either like the future of technology and convenience or complete, you know, or a company that treats its drivers terribly and resorts to unethical tactics to acquire customers. I mean, it's like it's this very weird split, you know, double thing, double edged sword with Uber.
When Uber has raised more money probably than any startup in current Silicon Valley startup, it's a $1.5 billion in six rounds from 32 investors, including several $100 million from Google Ventures. Founded by Travis Kalanick and Garrett Camp, we should explain for those who don't know, although I imagine most of our audience does, it's a cab service in effect, a black car. Originally, it was a black car service. The thing that made it different was instead of phoning them up and saying, pick me up, I'm ready to go, you'd have an app on your phone, and it was actually a very lovely experience. The app would already have your credit card information. You tap it, say, I want a ride. You could see how far away the car was. You could see as it approached on a map. You'd see a picture of your driver. Your driver would see a picture of you and where to pick you up. You'd get in the car. You'd go where you wanted to. And then you'd get out of the car. And that'd be it. The tip and the payment all handled by Uber. So it was a very nice friction-free transaction. The early Uber cars were all kind of nice black cars. They had Uber X, which is somewhat of a lower-cost service. And I think they maybe even go lower than that. So there's a variety of cars that might...
Uber bike, yeah.
Uber bike. And then, of course, they got a lot of heat in Washington, D.C., in New York City, in Toronto. I think that Toronto's about to make Uber illegal because the taxi services said this is essentially an unlicensed taxi service, and you make us buy medallions and go through a huge regulatory hoops, and you're not doing that to Uber. And you know, I don't know whether it's lobbying from the taxi services or I think it is probably. But the taxi commission, you know, it's kind of like the Airbnb problems with the hotel commissions. There, it's a new way of doing things, and there maybe are some concerns. An Uber car hit an immigrant family in San Francisco a few months ago and killed a 6-year-old. There have been alleged reports of sexual attacks in Uber cars by Uber drivers. But really the issues that's surfacing now is the aggressive promotion of Uber. First, a couple of months ago, we heard that Uber was going after Lyft by actually getting in Lyft cars and trying to solicit their drivers.
Right. Well, Lyft is one of their competitors, and they would have, supposedly, they had Uber employees calling in Lyft rides, getting the Lyft drivers to go to pick them up, and then canceling, right? Like basically taking away their fares, and or getting into these cars and pitching Lyft drivers to move over to Uber about all the reasons why Uber was better for them.
You know what's so interesting? The name Uber, which sounds at the beginning it sounded like they're better, they're good, and now it's starting to sound like Deutschland Uber alles. It's like the connotations are not as good. So the latest kerfuffle came from a private event that Uber had, in which one of their senior vice presidents for business said some things that were pretty appalling.
Yeah, and ironically,
$1 million fund to go after journalists. Nobody would know it.
And we should explain this. So what happened was this was an off-the-record event. Ed Norton, the actor, was there. Ariana Huffington was there. And this Michael Wolff.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a nice event.
Like, they're trying to make nice. They know that they're having PR problems, right? So they set up these fancy dinners with all these heavy hitters to, like, make nice and clean glasses and get buddy-buddy because they know that they're having PR problems, like, as a company, right? So this is why they're setting up these dinners, okay? So, like, that's the irony of it.
So I don't know the Waverly Inn in New York, but I'm guessing it's a pretty nice.
Oh, it's hip. It's hip and nice. Yeah.
So they asked Michael Wolff of USA Today to go, and he, in turn, invited a date, Ben Smith, happens to be editor-in-chief of BuzzFeed, to come along with him.
And now, just a little moment here. Michael Wolff, just his background, tries to be as nasty as he can be all the time. And he went to the Foursquare conference, having nothing to do with our app Foursquare, but Foursquare from now Lehman Brothers. And it's all off the record. They make this absolutely clear. And Wolff revealed absolutely everything from the event and created a book called Twilight of the Moguls. So Wolff is no friend of off the record. Wolff invites.
It is an off-the-record event, though. And he says, Wolff said.
But the argument is, unless the journalist agrees,
right,
it ain't off the record. And Ben Smith, whom I trust on this, never heard that it was off the record.
Molfin is writing in USA Today, says, I had understood the Uber dinner, like other such media meet and greets, was off the record. I neglected, however, to tell Smith this. He says, while I might have fairly assumed Smith knew the context, this was my oversight, though surely not Uber's. And you know what? It's everybody's oversight, because as you say, nothing's off the record until it's agreed that it's off the record by both parties. Right. So off the record doesn't mean what you think it means. I might have thought, too, that as my date, he would have asked if there was an understanding. Oh, Wolf's throwing Smith under the bus here.
Yeah, he really is. And again, this is Michael Wolf, who himself has absolutely flaunted off-the-record rules, who wrote an entire book out of the Foursquare event, which is clearly off the record. Everyone knows it's off the record. He knew it was off the record. And now he's acting holier than thou?
Yeah.
BS, Michael. BS.
So Ed Norton was there. He's a friend of the founder. Shauna Robertson, his wife, a movie producer. Mort Zuckerman, now of the Daily News.
And interesting that Wolf is naming names
at an off-the-record event. Bob Pittman, of the CEO of Clear Channel, Arianna Huffington, Chris Hughes, the owner of the New Republic and former Facebooker. Chris might even still be a Facebooker. No, I think he left Facebook.
He was one of the founders.
And he says a long table about 40 feet or more. Smith was seated at the far end with Emil Michael, who is Uber's senior vice president for business. Now, Wolf says, I was at the other end of the table, so I didn't hear this conversation. But apparently, so this is actually additional detail that we haven't read before. Smith.
Arianna Huffington just tweeted that she was also at the other end of the table.
I didn't hear anything, darling. I wasn't there. I don't know what they're talking about, darling, and I'm going to take an Uber right now. Smith. I don't know why she sounds like Zsa Zsa, but she kind of does.
Smith. She never says darling. She makes a point of never saying darling. But
I know. But she should say darling. If you're going to talk like that, you should say darling. I knew her when she was Arianna Stassinopoulos. Okay, I'm just saying. Smith apparently engaged Michael in a discussion of Uber's frequent bad press and came away with a set of quotes or snippets of quotes which had Michael saying that Uber, if it wanted to, could investigate journalists, including their personal lives. As Smith represented Michael's conversation, and this was a BuzzFeed posting, Michael is the executive at Uber. Michael's angle was directed at Sarah Lacey, the founder and editor of Pando Daily, and Lacey has been critical of Uber and its aggressive
tactics,
and so forth.
You know, a couple of sexist promos. And,
I should mention that in the BuzzFeed article, this is the quote. Over dinner, he outlined the notion of spending, quote, $1 million, end quote, to hire four top opposition researchers and four journalists. That team could, he said, help Uber fight back against the press. They'd look into, quote, your personal lives, your families, end quote, and give the media a taste of its own medicine. Michael was particularly focused. This, again, is Ben, the BuzzFeed editor-in-chief. Michael was particularly focused on one journalist, Sarah Lacey, the editor of Pando Daily, a sometimes combative voice inside the industry. Lacey recently accused Uber of sexism and misogyny. She wrote that she was deleting her Uber app after BuzzFeed reported that Uber appeared to be working with a French escort service. She said, I don't know how many more signals we need. The company simply doesn't respect us or prioritize our safety. At dinner, Michael expressed outrage at Lacey's column and said that women are far more likely to get assaulted by taxi drivers than Uber drivers. This is to me the sentence that was the most outrageous. He said that he thought Lacey should be held personally responsible for any woman who follows her lead in deleting Uber and is then sexually assaulted. He said also they could, in particular, if they went after her, prove a particular and very specific claim about her personal life. By the way, I don't know, and Ben does not report what that is, and we don't need to talk about that. I don't think that's an issue. He at no point suggested that Uber has actually hired opposition researchers or plans to. He cast as something that would make sense. The company would be justified for doing. Now, Michael did not deny it. He actually issued a statement that said the remarks attributed to me at a private dinner born out of frustration during an informal debate over what I feel is sensationalistic media coverage of the company I'm proud to work for do not reflect my actual views and have no relation to the company's views or approach. They're wrong no matter the circumstance, and I regret them. There was a Twitter, Kalanick had a Twitter storm of about 17 tweets in which he apologized. At no point did anybody mention whether Michael would be reprimanded or punished or even fired.
The CEO did a 14-tweet stream saying that what he said had no representation in the company. We're very sorry, blah, 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 blah. This is not our company. But there's just been too many signals now.
Well, and then there's this other issue of them.
The God view.
The God view.
God view, yep.
So you want to talk about that?
Which is, yeah, I mean, this is when we talk about trust and particularly around Google, because this is a show about Google, like this is what I was talking about when I said Google has roots to culture, right? So Uber has this thing called God view, purportedly, allegedly, which means that certain employees of the company, not drivers who are contractors, but employees of the company, particularly executives, have this live map of cars, of Uber cars, and people who are in them. And they can pretty much track anybody who's going somewhere at any given time. And so there was a Medium piece by someone whose name I didn't recognize. I think maybe he's a VC or he's someone of some importance, who said that, you know, someone that he knew also in the industry was texting him saying, hey, are you in a car on this street and this street, asking him about his location. And he said, yeah, you know, how do you know where I am? And she said, well, I'm at this Uber party here in Chicago, and they've got the God view up on the, you know, or they've got this, you know, the view of where your car is up on the wall.
And you like, should be proud. You've been selected.
You should be delighted that Uber's showing off this amazing technology where they get to watch you in real time drive around the city in a car, which is like, you know, and this person said, I never gave them any permission to broadcast my location real time. There's this accusation out there that people have access to your private information and, you know, where you're going and who you're with and, you know, what time of day.
Is it possible that, I mean, I think you're starting to see, there seems to be a pattern, but maybe the pattern is being, remember, Uber has been really fought, you know, hard against by the taxi commissions. Lyft has been complained a lot about Uber. They're, of course, a direct competitor. And some of their complaints turn out to be kind of maybe not, you know, it doesn't. Anyway, there seems to be more to this story than meets the eye. Let's not forget that BuzzFeed is heavily invested in by Andreessen Horowitz, which also is a Lyft, one of the major Lyft investors. It seems like there's more to this story than we're
seeing. Well, I think that's going too far. I mean, I think, and Andreessen, somebody said that to Andreessen, and he said, oh, come on, really? And I agree with him. Like, there's some conspiracies don't really happen, folks. The world's not that well organized, and I don't believe for a second that the investors behind Lyft said, let's make sure we get BuzzFeed Ben invited to this dinner so they can feed Pando more bad stuff, so that it just doesn't.
Yeah. And BuzzFeed,
but the bad guys here are Uber.
Uber has not denied that Michael said those things, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, all you got to do is give this guy half a bottle of wine. I mean, it doesn't take much, right? Like, I mean, really. Like, I don't mean to.
So are you, okay, so let me ask you. See, it's not an issue for me because I can't use Uber in Petaluma. John Hodgman, whom we respect a lot, said, I'm going to delete my Uber app. Are you going to delete your Uber app?
My Uber app is deleted. I have emailed help and asked them to delete my account because just deleting the app from your phone does not actually close your account. And there's no way to close your account on the Uber website. You actually have to email them. And a human being from Uber wrote back and said she'd be happy to delete my account, but she wanted to know why first. So I responded and said that I do not trust Uber with my data and could she please close my account? I have yet to hear from her. I did this about 24 hours ago. So I'm already annoyed that there isn't a self-service, just close my account. I feel very strongly that that is like, you know, giving a customer an exit route is, you know, responsibility zero for a service like this. You know, they do store my credit card. I should be able to say, hey, delete my stuff. But, you know, that's where I'm at with it. I'm waiting for them to get back and say, yeah, I'm deleting your account. I live in New York City. We're getting a car service. I mean, when you live in Brooklyn, there aren't like yellow taxi cabs that drive the streets of Brooklyn. But I grew up, you know, even as a teenager, there's car service, which are these little, you know, storefront deals where you call. Yes, I have to make a voice call, which is inconvenient, but you call and then they come and get you and it costs a few bucks and it's like not. It's not that big a deal. So I plan to use, you know, car service and public transportation and yellow taxi cabs for now because I wasn't really a big Uber user to begin with. I know it's a big deal in the San Francisco area because getting a taxi is apparently very difficult. But the app experience is nice. But there's a service here called Carmel, which has an app that's not as nice as Uber, but is close and that you can hail a car that way. So I do that from the airport. So yeah, I'm done. I'm done with Uber.
I downloaded Lyft today, and I will probably not use Uber. And I think that what they've done is fairly disgusting. You add it all up. They also went after investors in Lyft, and it's just the culture, right? My favorite line of the whole thing came from in response to a tweet of mine. Richard Dunham said, "Google is changing its motto to 'Don't be Uber.'"
I should point out that Google is a little bit in bed with Uber because the Google Maps app
invested.
They invest not only they invest hundreds of millions of dollars. The Google Maps app, if you have Uber installed on your phone, will as one of the give you a chance to call an Uber.
And that made me really uncomfortable when they did that.
Sorry, Gina.
No, I that made me super uncomfortable when they did that. I remember doing that in the changelog and feeling like, wait, whoa, Uber? Ugh. I felt kind of icky about Uber.
Even anyway. Then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing to me. Like, what responsibility? And you know, look, we've had our outrage moments on this show about a lot of different things. There are times when apologies work and I accept them and I move on. And there are times that they don't. To me, Travis's Kalanick's apology didn't work for me. The apology that would have worked would have been emails fired immediately for what happened. Case closed. They didn't do that. And I feel like all of these things, you know, put together just indicate this like really horrible, you know, company culture. And I just can't support it. So look, I believe that people make mistakes and can change. I've made mistakes and I've apologized. But in this case, just wasn't enough. So yeah, that's why I'm done with Uber.
Yeah. And I think now we have to look to Matt Kohler, Bill Gurley, Tim Ferriss. These are people who are on the board. So they are the CEO's boss. And are they going to hold the CEO accountable here? Let's list their names. Ted Mizell, Matt Kohler, Steve Jang, I guess, Bill Gurley, Timothy Ferriss, Paul Bregiel, Steve Russell, and Oscar Salazar. That's the board of Uber. Those are the real ultimate bosses. And one way or the other, I was on the board of a company when we had some issues, and at the end of the day, it's up to the board to say what's what, and we've got to see how they do. You know, and there's another story here too, which is the journalistic story. I just finished reading, you know, Michael Wolf of all people throwing BuzzFeed.
He really throws him under the bus. Yeah,
really, really does. And we have another story that was like this recently when the Guardian went in a business meeting with Whisper. And found out that Whisper was not really keeping things as private as seemed and seemed to be playing with people's privacy and identity in a lot of ways and reported that. And some journalists in that case, as in this case, kind of got mad and said, oh, you're ruining the game. You're ruining the rules. You're off the record. And my response to that is that as a journalist, your first responsibility, full stop, is to the public you serve. And access journalism is corrupting. And, gee, you won't get invited back for the Waverly dinner. You won't get invited by the Silicon Valley company to do a deal with them. Well, fine. It's your job to protect the public. And if you know something bad is going on, even those people who were at the dinner knowing it was off the record, I think that there's some level at which it becomes over the top and to say, I'm telling you this is off the record, but I feel a need to tell people about this. And I certainly as hell would have called Sarah Lacey and told her what was going on. This was shameful, and I'm ashamed of people in my business that they don't keep their priorities straight in both these stories.
And there is this pattern of stories. It just goes on and on and on. And as Sarah Lacey points out, Uber's strategies, you let the news cycle fade, and then you move on, and you don't change.
Right. I mean, I think Sarah Lacey's piece was a bit over the top, but I understand why it was, because they're talking about going after her personally and in a way that nobody will know it's us. And attacking her.
She points out they ran a promotion in France that promises to pair Uber riders with hot chicks.
Yeah, that was the piece on the piece on sexism and misogyny that she wrote that Michael was apparently complaining about at that dinner. So that's what kind of pissed him off, right? And so then she wrote her. So Ben called Lacey for comment before he published his story. And yeah, she wrote a piece about that. And I don't know what, like, we're not going to discuss whatever thing it is that Michael was saying he knew and was going to reveal about her. I have no idea. But she was clearly shaken up and afraid for her kids.
Oh, that's awful.
her young kids, and so yes, her piece was clearly she was
there was a
clearly
threat.
Yeah, she felt threatened, she felt vulnerable, and you could tell.
What is going on? We are in the middle of the worst bro culture.
Well, let's go to Bill Cosby. That story.
That's been a long, but that's gone on for decades.
Ta-Nehisi Coates, who, by the way, is on the faculty at CUNY, is an honored colleague of mine, wrote a really, really good essay today in The Atlantic, which is redundant in his case because all his essays are really good. But saying that he covered Cosby, followed him for 2 years as he was doing kind of the shaming of lesser cultural acts back in the day. And he knew this stuff was going on back then, but he chose not to deal with it because then I'd have to deal with that whole thing and so on and so forth. Mark Whitaker wrote a biography, chose not to touch it at all. And Ta-Nehisi said today that he's had few regrets in his careers, but this is one, because at the end of the day, you had to believe one person over 13 people, and he says, I should have dealt with it. And it was eloquent. And I think that, yes, you get Gian Gomeshi at CBC. That's somebody I knew and I was a fan of. You get all these BBC men who've been accused of doing bad things with their public position. It's a big bad bro problem here for us men.
It's really sad. I thought we were making such great strides.
I thought so too.
Well,
and it's really
it's funny.
Sad.
I go back and forth about this. On one hand, I'm like, yeah, wow, you know, like we're making no progress. This is terrible, right? But then it's like, well, maybe I just know about it more because of the internet.
Maybe
the system's working. I mean, what was his name? The comedian that did the comedian that did the bit about Cosby. You know, he calls him out during his bit, which is, you know, which is the thing that kind of got the momentum. But what did he say during his bit? He said, go home and Google Cosby rape. You'll see I'm right.
Yeah.
Like, that's how he backed up his claim, you know, that these 13 women had, or I think like 15 now, had accused him. So on one hand, when I'm my more depressed moments, I think, yes, we have this huge sexism problem. Nothing is changing. This is just, you know, getting worse and worse. And then at other times I think, you know what? The system's working. People are getting called out. You know, transparency, you know? We're learning more, we're talking more, we're having this conversation, we're identifying patterns because we have, you know, a lot more information and a lot more conversation about it. And that's how we make progress. So, I don't know, I try to be an optimist about it.
I love this.
His show got canceled, yeah. Right? Both shows, the Netflix special and the NBC show.
But, you know, in all seriousness, this is why you need Don't Be Evil. You need to empower your employees to say, call you out on it and be licensed to say, should we do that?
What about the fact the chat room's bringing this up, that the system also allows a lot of false accusations and allegations that gain the power of truth just because they've been published on the internet or on Twitter?
Yeah.
Do we have a system for really being, really determining what's true and what's not?
Vetting what's true and what's not.
I think over the long run, we kind of do. I think that's the point, is that the truth will out generally. Can people be, as we've talked about this show many, many times, can people be attacked, impersonated, hounded? All kinds of bad things can happen. But I think Gina's right. We have a better system for more checks now and for more truth to come out.
And we have tools that empower more people to do that vetting, to do that checking, than we ever have before. And it was kind of what I was saying a couple weeks ago, you know, technology isn't inherently good or evil. It just is, right? I mean, it's just tools. But yeah, I mean, I have to believe that the truth will come out if people care enough, you know, eventually. I mean, look, I was outraged that there were that many Cosby. I had no idea that these accusations were against Cosby until this guy did this bit, right? I'm thrilled that he spoke out about it and used his platform and that it gained steam and this is what's going on. I mean, look, I don't want to crucify anybody, but this is what happened.
This is why I'm Jeff. You're doing the work of the angels because we need. I think what we need is journalists who are really high integrity journalists. Who will dig, who will try to, I mean, isn't that what originally this whole point of, maybe actually isn't what originally journalism was about, but at some point, in the modern era, journalism started to become about people trying to find the objective facts, the objective truth, and giving that information to people so they could make judgments. We've fallen far from that lofty goal. I don't know. What do you think, Mr. Professor of Journalism? Isn't that what it's, what good journal, you see, I mean, originally journalism was yellow journalism, right? It was always, until very recently, journalism was about arguing
mass journalism.
Yeah.
I mean back before 1605, pardon me for this Gutenberg moment, journalism was private information paid for.
Right.
And then it took from 1605 until the steam press in the 19th century before it became mass. Once it became mass, the idea I keep playing around with lately, and I had lunch with my old editor today and made me start thinking about this again, is I want to play with the idea of the end of mass. I gave a talk at something called Newsgeist in Phoenix this weekend, which was a great unconference for my business. And I think that the root of a lot of the problems that we have now in media is the reliance on mass. Not just, and I don't say that as a snob, I say that because it's a business problem. It's corrupting. You go after page views, you go after traffic, you go after a volume. And a volume-based business, journalism as a volume-based business, is inherently corrupted. But I think that journalism as a service-based business isn't. And we see some hope there. We see Chartbeat is working with the FT now to sell attention minutes. And Tony Hale, the CEO of Chartbeat, who's somebody we ought to have on at some point, is quite eloquent on this, on how attention can be a better measure of quality. That's what Medium and Ev Williams are going after. They're selling TTR, Total Time Read. They believe in that. It's not the only way to get us. You know, just time spent is not necessarily a great measure. But there are some efforts to flee to quality here. And I think that as we flee away from mass media economics, we may get better, but as long as we stay with mass media economics, it just stays pure volume.
In other words, promotes clickbait and sensationalism.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And what we would somehow like to, I would somehow like to promote is maybe they used to call it investigative journalistic class of people who feel like who have kind of a calling, a higher calling to ferreting out the truth. You know, the Woodward and Bernstein. Because this is the problem. We don't, these allegations fly back and forth. You can get a feeling. I mean, we all have a feeling about Uber that doesn't feel good. It feels like there's something wrong, but we don't really know.
That's true.
But do we trust the press to get it for us, right?
We don't anymore. I mean, BuzzFeed is the press now.
I trust Ben Smith.
Do you?
Watch out for us first.
You probably know him, right?
Well, yeah, I met him, and I think, listen, BuzzFeed, I'm very critical of BuzzFeed as a last vestige of mass clickbait, but the journalism, but at the same time, BuzzFeed does very good journalism, and Ben Smith does as well, and you know, cats are the new classifieds that subsidize what the good journalists at BuzzFeed do.
Yeah, I'm going to have a hard time trusting BuzzFeed as a journalistic source, or Vice,
I generally agree.
Of these other so-called journalistic sources that are driven by cats.
I generally absolutely agree, and I think that's a corrupting problem, and it's what I said in my book. But then again, I think Smith himself is a good journalist, and in this case,
Vice too. Both BuzzFeed and Vice do some good journalism, but it's intermingled with crap, and I have a hard time.
Vice, I actually think less so. I think Vice, and by the way, full disclosure, is on December 1st at CUNY, where we are giving the Knight Innovation Award in journalism to Shane Smith of Vice.
Well. There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
I think Vice is reinvented itself. You know, I think it's a different. The Vice of today is very different than the Vice.
The Vice of today is doing some really amazing reporting and proving that young people care about their work.
Yeah, I mean that's clearly what they're doing. Is they're trying to bring young people to real journalistic.
David Carr, who smashed them. Then did a mea culpa and said, no, Vice is actually okay.
Yeah.
BuzzFeed, I generally agree with you, though. There is some good stuff there. Vox, which I think is wonderful. Where I think it goes astray is that it's still going after some volume page views when it should be trying to explain things, but the business model isn't there yet.
Well, isn't that kind of the basic problem, that there is no money in the kind of journalism that I'm asking for? Or is there? Is there a way to do true investigative, high integrity journalism?
Oh, there is.
And make a living?
Yeah, there is. But not in the way that it was done before, where you had, you know, you had Pierre Omidyar. His first reflex was to say, well, I need a sports section to get audience to my investigative journalism. No, no, that's the wrong old model. Right. And he's not doing that now. He's trying to figure out how to do this. And we're not there in the business models yet at all. But no, I definitely think it's possible.
I'm just old fashioned. Cause I mean, I if you go to the top of Vice's page, really great, deep investigative and important stories, and then as you scroll down, they've got a lot of sugar in here to get you to, again, the young people particularly, to read it, and
yeah, it's like broccoli wrapped in cotton candy.
Can swimming dolphins really cure your meth addiction? Why do Swedish students love yelling so much?
Yeah.
Put your hands in the air for World Toilet Day. In my day, you wouldn't see this mixed in with good journalism, but maybe I just have to get over that.
I agree. Well, the other one that bothers me most, actually, which starts with very good motives but ends up being very cynical, is Upworthy, highly manipulative.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to read Upworthy for news.
Well, they're trying to get young people to do just that because they're trying to, you know, this will change your life, and once you know it doesn't change your life, you don't believe them anymore.
By the way, Vice has an article, All the Reasons Why Uber is the Worst.
Well, there you go. It's a listicle linking to all the critical journalism that others have done elsewhere.
Right.
Is that what it is?
Right next to the human billboards of New York City. But okay.
I mean, you know, this is interesting. I mean, part of it is the rise of kind of social media, the fact that people go to Facebook, their Facebook news feed and their Twitter timeline to get their news, so they cop from thing to thing. I think Twit is so interesting to me, Leo, because you do long shows that do in-depth discussions like the one that we're having now. Because it's, you know, I think your audience is primarily the audio listeners, right? From downloading the podcast, they're typically commuters or folks at the gym, you know, people who aren't in a position where they can hop from, you know, one listicle to another, one Upworthy, Curiosity Gap headline from another on their news feed, right? But you kind of get this in-depth content. I mean, I love that you are sort of, you're living your values by doing the shows the way that you do them. But I know that, you know, when we've had this discussion, you know, how does video or podcast go viral? They don't, right? There isn't a virality that can happen in this sort of medium. There's an in-depthness that can happen. And I don't really know what the answer is. I mean, if you're an advertising-based business, by its nature, has to go after as many eyeballs as possible in order to support itself, right? So it has to be free, and it has to get it has to involve kitten listicles.
It has to.
I mean, does it?
I often think it's just a matter of time before I'm going to have to retire because the world has left me behind, and maybe I'm just too old for this.
No,
well, I didn't mean for it to go there. I was congratulating you on doing the in depth.
Good work, Gina. You made Leo retire.
I need big listicles. Gina. That's what we need. Big listicles.
Kitten listicles.
Kitten listicles.
If you did This Week in Cats, you would get 2 weeks traffic, and then everyone would yell at you and abandon you.
Yeah,
I
know.
The point is, you have a relationship of trust with your audience. They're more than an audience. They're your friends. They're your community.
Yeah.
That's the future.
And you have a super engaged audience. I mean, I can't keep up with the chat room while we talk.
I know.
I mean, this is like live audience. It's amazing. It's amazing what goes on here. When I explain this to people who don't watch live, they're like, oh, that's crazy.
Somebody in the chat room is saying, I didn't realize there was video. This is the first time I've ever seen video of Twig. And doesn't Gina look adorable in her furred hoodie?
Oh, thanks. It's cold here, you guys. It's cold, and I'm frightened and scared because Leo's retiring.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I do that to scare the kids.
You shop at Uniqlo, Gina?
I've actually resisted. I've resisted it because
I see. There's one as I drive to the airport in San Francisco. It's a what? It's a Chinese?
No, it's Japanese. And it's like the IKEA of clothes. I love Uniqlo.
Great colors.
Really? You love Uniqlo?
I love Uniqlo.
It's uniqlo.com if you want to.
It's phenomenal. It's just amazing. And they have $20 hoodies and fleeces, and they have a fuzzy hoodie.
Yeah. But you don't wear this stuff, do you?
I do. I wear the incredibly light. They have an unbelievably light a fleece.
Is that the heat tech?
No, that's different. That supposedly is you sweat warms you up. I'm not sure.
I don't like that idea.
It's good layering, like basic layering material. Cold.
Okay.
I gotta go check this out. I've seen it. There's one of the Atlantic 7.
They have a really nice fuzzy hoodie there. You'll love Gina.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Look at this.
Can't resist a good fuzzy hoodie.
Outerwear outperforms the cold.
Yeah.
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 Now this is sexy. stretch down jacket.
Stay puffed marshmallow. Listen, whatever
I love those marshmallow jackets.
Hat hair. I'll do the whole thing. Yeah. Red nose. I don't care.
You don't appreciate them until you're in the cold, and then you go, wow.
Yeah.
These are great.
Yeah.
So Leo, what about you and Uber?
Well, like I said, I've only ridden Uber twice. It was in Paris. The second time I was cheated by the driver who said, oh, I don't know, the application has crashed. I don't know how much you owe me. Ooh. I said, well, what should I pay you? Oh, 50 euros. I was ripped off by, so
oh.
That's
Wait,
the
I thought
last...
you didn't pay. Doesn't it just charge you? Is it supposed to just charge you?
Yeah,
the app?
But the app had crashed, he said.
Huh.
It's France. You don't expect Uber to work in France, do you? In Paris.
He snowed you.
He snowed me. And what am I going to do? I'm not going to pay you. I didn't want to do that. So I just I threw 50 euros at him and ran.
In France, I can see if it was a language issue, which there would be for me, I could see how using an app would be a lot easier than money changing hands.
Uber had just come to Paris. This was at Le Web. And so we don't have Uber up here. Although I think Jennifer uses Uber a lot. I think I know people who use Uber a lot. I guess when they go to San Francisco. Do you use it, Jason? In San Francisco?
No, I've never used Uber. Yeah, although I will say we had Phil Nickenson and Matteo Doni on All About Android a couple of weeks ago,
they came and
went back using Uber. Yeah. They were able to get Uber here in Sonoma.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You can press the button and it says, well, there'll be an Uber car there in an hour and a half.
Yeah, they waited 10 minutes. It was
really?
Here pretty fast.
Oh, maybe it's here now. Yeah. Well, I don't want to take Lyft either. That looks weird. So.
That mustache thing.
I don't want a pink mustache on my car.
It's not really my vibe.
I like yellow cabs. I just like a yellow cab. That's all I want. Just a yellow cab.
Although at some point they installed screens that in yellow cabs here
and they talk
York.
At you. Hi, this is Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and welcome.
And it's the worst touchscreen ever, and you have to like jab at it to turn it off a million times.
That was a great episode of The Good Wife from like a season ago. I'm catching up on when de Blasio wouldn't shut up in the cab.
Yes, I remember that one. And in fact, Uber was just on the last episode without giving anything away. I know you're watching it now, but there was an Uber mention on the last episode of The Good Wife, which is a fantastic, fantastic show just in terms of technology references. But yeah, there was a moment where they were like, did you take a cab? He said, yeah, I took an Uber. And they were like, give me your phone. We want to see the route you took. So I was like,
The Good Wife seems to be really up on all of the latest issues of privacy and so forth.
Oh, it's a great show.
There's
a fake Google. Chum Hum is the name of the search engine in the show. And there's this ongoing case of like Chum Hum, whatever, being a monopoly, basically using their powers to rank results in the search engine unfairly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, they rip situations directly from the news.
Tony Wang
His last season was the NSA snoops.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Do you watch it, Leo?
No, I've never seen it.
I thought that I gave up on it because I missed like the first six episodes. I thought, well, I'll never catch up. I'm now binge watching last season to this season, and then from the beginning. I'm going to watch the whole damn thing.
Oh, I intentionally miss episodes because I want to binge watch everything. I don't want to.
It's great.
I highly
recommend. And one of the NSA snoops is the guy who plays Jared in Silicon Valley on HBO. It's great.
He is also one of the voices in Big Hero 6. Is it Jared? It's the guy with the funny weird beard.
Oh, no. Jared was the business manager guy, the guy that got stuck out on the barge.
Love
or
him.
Not the barge, but
love
the,
him.
Yeah, the barge.
Yeah, he's great. He's also in The Loop, that wonderful movie based on In the Thick of It. Anyway, I'm sorry. Where are we going here? We're going to take a break so Jeff can go answer the door. He has been told his Nexus 6 is on the truck.
I keep on refreshing. It's like refreshing. Do I have a new operating system? Refreshing. Do I have a new phone?
And thanks to Tony Wang, I am going to have a tool of the week this week that comes from Uniqlo.
Oh,
how do you like that? How do you like them apples? That's a little later on. Yeah, you know, it's weird because Jason Howell, host of All About Android and our producer today, was the guy who was refreshing like right and left, right and right, right left on the day that the Nexus 6 went online and available, and was got in the first 30 seconds and bought one. So you got it sooner than anybody else. I, some weeks later, learned that every Wednesday they'd put a few more on sale, and I was able to snag one on the Play Store. But Jeff, where did you get yours?
Motorola.
Okay, yes.
Two Twig fans on Twitter, God bless you both, alerted me. I went on. I seem to have bought it at the very end. Oh, that item in your check in your what did you call it? Cart is no longer for sale. So I just refreshed, and I had two, and I tried to delete the right one, and boom, I had it, and it's on a truck. It's in New Jersey. It's in New Jersey.
So of all, it's odd because Jeff ordered it the most recently, and he's going to get his first.
He's going to get his. Soonest. You're going to get
mine's
yours.
Mine's on its way. It's
yours
in
was
Illinois.
Ordered a week after mine. I was there at the front gates, and I got in, and I'm waiting. It hasn't even shipped
I'm
yet.
Just saying
there's just no rhyme or reason here.
And mine shipped from China.
Mine shipped from Lexington, Kentucky.
Huh.
Oddly enough, they're all coming on UPS, right? No, yours is FedEx.
No, FedEx.
Mine's UPS. And Jason's ships on Thursday.
I'm convinced mine's never coming. Mine's just never going to come.
It's so weird.
Yeah, mine came from Shenzhen.
T-Mobile has it now as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, everybody has it.
Well, don't worry.
Everybody has it.
I'm starting to, we had Kevin Toefel on last week. He had his. I'm starting to hear that the battery life, like on all these QHD displays, these quad HD displays, is not the greatest.
Really?
Stick with your OnePlus One.
This OnePlus One battery life really is.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. It's just awesome. Phenomenal.
I think we have a clear winner in battery life, and it's OnePlus One.
Oh, boy, do we. It sets the standard for battery life.
It's because it's a 1080p screen. If any of these big screen guys were 1080p, it'd be fine. But they decided, well, we got more battery. Let's throw more pixels at it.
More power.
And I'm curious if Lollipop's going to make that better or not. I mean, theory Lollipop does, but I'm curious.
Speaking of Lollipop, did either of you get it on your Nexus 7?
Nope.
Nope. I dug up my Nexus 7, which is the original Nexus 7. So, and I hadn't looked at it in a while. That thing is just slow. Like, it's just slow. It had a ton of updates to get through, but it's stuttery and slow. And
you know what I did? I put mine in my briefcase next to a magnet.
Yeah.
And it ruins the pixels.
No.
Oh, yeah. No.
And I love this thing so much. I ordered another one before they go out of stock.
I have my second generation here. I brought it in, kept keeping it charged on wireless. I love Qi charging, by the way. You got to love that. And so just sitting on the dock there, and every once in a while I check. We know now, though, thanks to a post on Reddit by a Google engineer, the story of the updates. And I will tell you the story of the updates when we come back. Why you are getting an update but you aren't, and so forth and so on. Yeah. We now know the truth about all of this. But first, a word from our friends at SmartThings. SmartThings was a wonderful Kickstarter project to create a hub for your smart home that would understand everything you have in the smart home and allow you to set up a smart automated system without a lot of muss and fuss, to give you home security, to allow you to control things like your lights and your music. SmartThings is so cool. Get a notification if someone you don't know tries to enter your house, or get an alert to prevent a small leak from becoming a major flood. Yes, they have moisture sensors. Control and automate your lights and your small appliances wherever you go. Stay connected to your family by getting notifications of when people come and go, and protect valuable items and secure areas that are off limits. SmartThings is so cool. And of course, you control it all with a mobile app on your iPhone or your Android device. They have a huge number of sensors, but it all starts with the hub, the SmartThings hub. In fact, a great way to start is to work with the kits that they offer. They have a variety of kits available, security kits, but also kits designed to get things done, like the water detection kit I mentioned, which has the sensors that will detect moisture. You can get instant push or text notifications whenever moisture is found in a particular area, a basement, a stairwell, a laundry room. You can monitor temperatures if you're worried about the pipes freezing in your cabin or your Brooklyn home. You can have notifications there. And this is the nicest thing about smart things. If you've got a Nest thermostat or a Honeywell or an Eon, it talks to those too. So you can use the smart things hub and the smart things units, but you can also use Dropcam, Sonos, the Philips Hue, Logitech, and of course your Nest thermostat. Furthermore, if you're a developer, you can also create new ways to use smart things and publish them for everyone else to use. It works with If Then Then That. I can just go on and on. It works with your Schlage locks, your Kwikset locks, your Train heating system, your Sonos, your Foscam, your Belkin, with your Y things. Now, we've got solution kits starting at $170 for Twit fans. Home security kits starting at $350. Each of them, of course, starts with the hub and then has the devices you need to add additional capabilities. You'll be getting a smart home in less than 15 minutes, plus free shipping within the U.S. SmartThings.com/Twit. And the deal is use the offer code TWIT10 at checkout to get 10% off any home security or solution kit. TWIT10, TWIT10. At checkout, smartthings.com/twit. It's such a good solution. Did you get your Kickstarter reward yet? Didn't you buy it
I did. I backed the Kickstarter. It was a while ago. It was like September. It was like 2012.
Oh, so you've
got it. A couple years ago. Yeah, so I got my kit a long time ago. And in fact, I'm pretty sure the version that I got is out of date at this point than the one they're shipping. So it was an early prototype.
Oh, it's so much improved. Yeah.
It's awesome. I love SmartThings from the get-go. I had it hooked up. I had it hooked up to my mailbox, my postal mailbox outside. So when the mail got dropped in, I got a push notification on my phone, which was awesome.
So awesome.
Yeah, it's a great product.
FedEx guy throws your Nexus 6 over the fence.
Exactly.
Yeah, then you'll know it's here. Katie has just arrived home from school. This is so cool. So she has in her backpack the little thing that's a presence sensor. And yep. You'll get a text message when your kids arrive back from school, that kind of thing. It's just so neat.
Yeah, I had so one on at a stroller, neat. So I knew when she was out to walk.
Yeah, uh-huh. it's the coolest thing ever. I don't know what this guy's doing, but smartthings.com/twit. A good posting by a Google engineer on Reddit kind of cleared up a little bit. You know, so many people, and it's still happening now, were so anxious to get Android 5.0 Lollipop on their Nexus 5, their Nexus 4, their Nexus 7, their Motorola X, that they were downloading the jar files and trying to install them. And he posted, PSA, do not clear data for Google service framework. He said, so a lot of people are doing this, apparently, and it just screws everything up. But furthermore, explained that here's how these rollouts work. Did I explain this last week?
No.
I explained it on Twit.
Yeah, on Twit.
I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. I'm getting old. So what he said is 1%. So here's how it works. They've got the new Lollipop 5. It has been tested. The releases are out. They've even released the full APK, or I guess it's a jar file, for each of the phones. So if you really, wanted to, you can install it, but don't. What they do first, they roll it out to 1% randomly. And he said, it doesn't matter how much you press refresh. Remember we were wondering last week if actually pressing refresh could screw it up, asking too many times, can I have the update? He said, it doesn't matter. He said, you're either on the bus or you're off the bus. If you're on the bus, you're in the 1%, you'll get it. If not, you can refresh as many times as you want. You're not going to get it. And it's not going to make it any worse, because if there are no big, massive bugs, we've heard a couple, but I don't think there are any massive bugs. In the next week, and this is the next week now, I think, 25% will get it.
Oh, that's a big jump.
Yeah. So now 26% of all owners of Moto X's or Nexus 5's or Nexus 4's probably should have Lollipop, or will get it in the next day or so. The next jump is another 25%, and then the final 25%. So it takes it's 3 or 4 weeks to roll out the whole thing. And there's nothing you can do. You can't force the update. You could sideload it. But it seems to me sideloading causes some issues. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess 1% is actually quite a few users. And it makes sense that they would stage the rollout. And honestly, you know, maybe you don't want to be in the 1%, the canary in the coal mine, the people, you know, right? Because with software, you can test and test and test. This is a lesson I have to learn over and over again. You don't see the bug, or the bug doesn't happen until actual users get it.
Right.
And then you want to jump off a cliff. So it makes sense that they do 1%. Although we were saying last night on All About Android, or at least I was saying, you know, I wish that Google could just detect the people who are manually tapping check now, because those are the people who really care and really want it. And they could just win so many hearts by putting those people in the 1%. You know what I'm saying? Or the first 25%.
There ought to be like a fans club. You know, if you're a loyal user, you get early take on it. If I've bought every damn Nexus product there, I have, and if you happen to have written a kiss ass book about the company, and I have, you know, at least you get the stuff early.
Yeah, like some sort of opt in. Yeah, super fans.
Yeah,
but this is all companies do this. You can be a super fan, you know, if you get in the beta program or whatever. But understand, you're also. You're also, you know, cannon fodder. You're the first one over the hill.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
That's
true. And, right. And maybe they don't want us, you
they
know,
want
the
a super fan to stay,
platform.
Yeah, to stay happy.
To be talking about the buggy release that they got. Yeah,
exactly.
Don't upgrade to Lollipop. It's really buggy. You know, that's it's in your risk.
This one is from Jeff Jarvis, I'm guessing. To Google. Google now joins dumb TV news reports on what we've long known. Thanksgiving holiday traffic.
Are they going to have somebody standing? What's it called? A standouter? A stand-in?
Oh, right.
Stander?
Stand-up?
Stand-up.
Stand-up. A stand-up. Somebody standing.
I'm standing in front of I-5, and it's a mess.
Right.
They went through all this magnificent data, and they tell us, guess what? Wednesday has a lot of traffic. Thanks, Google.
But you got to admit, the infographic.
Are a lot of people going to shop on the day after Thanksgiving? Why don't you tell me that?
The infographic is well done. Right? Interestingly, Boston is Tuesday. Honolulu is Saturday. Providence is Saturday. And San Francisco is Saturday. So there are exceptions.
Yeah, they're fine.
If you must leave on Wednesday, skip the rush. The worst. This is just an infographic exercise.
Yeah, that's all it is.
We actually had fun on Monday. If you get a chance to watch Triangulation, I interviewed Gareth Cook, who's the author of the best infographics of 2014. And there's some really good ones. And we talked about bad infographics, clickbait infographics, and all of that. But there's some really nice. It can be done well. Good news for local travelers. Thanksgiving Day traffic is a breeze. They have a turkey in a car.
Yeah, the turkey's trying to get away from the table.
Run!
Get me out of here!
It says, Thanksgiving Day traffic is a breeze. It usually has the least traffic of the entire week. For traffic gurus looking to best even the lightest traffic days, make sure you stay off the road between noon and 2 on Thanksgiving Day. That's not clear. I don't understand what they're saying. Even the lightest, that is, actually, that's crappy, whatever they wrote there, because I don't understand what I'm supposed to do. Stay off the road between noon and 2. It's the best day for good traffic?
Hmm.
let me read this again. Thanksgiving Day traffic is a breeze. It usually has the least traffic in the entire week. Semicolon. For the traffic gurus looking to best even the lightest traffic days, make sure you stay off the road between noon and 2 on Thanksgiving Day.
So they're saying on the best day, the worst 2 hours are between 12 and 2.
Thank you for translating.
Right? That's what it sounds like.
See, this is the intelligence that you bring to think up. Trying to parse what the hell these people are saying in 140 characters. I don't understand.
My entire full-time job is trying to come up with a sentence that someone would say maybe in conversation expressing what a piece of data means, and it's not easy.
Hey, doing a deal, by the way. We should mention this. What's the website I should go to?
Thank you. It's goodwebbundle.com. We're doing a holiday promotion. ThinkUp got together with four of our favorite sites, Milkshake, Metafilter, The Toast, and News Blur. And we're offering something similar to Humble Bundle, not affiliated with Humble Bundle, but similar to Humble Bundle, in that you can buy a one-year membership to all of these sites in one shot for $96, which sounds like a lot of money. But if you pay for the normal price outside of the bundle, it would be almost $200. So it's about 50% off. And these are just a bunch of sites, you know, given the Uber story and the sort of model of startup that's like super funded and just trying to take over the world using all these, you know, crazy tactics. I think there are still a lot of small businesses on the web that are run, you know, through donations and through subscriptions. And I count my company as one of those. So this is one way to support sites like that. And hopefully, you know, one of these sites you've never heard of before, you'll discover something good. And if you buy the bundle, you get a coupon code. You can use it all five sites. And if you already have a membership, you can give it away to a friend. Great gift for your online hero. And yeah, so it's goodwebbundle.com. It's a one-time deal. Year's membership to five really great sites. And yeah, thanks, Leo. Thanks for letting me plug it.
What's the update on Metafilter? Wasn't Matt going to retire it or something? I mean, what happened?
Yeah, Metafilter had... it actually just redesigned. Look how beautiful it looks. It looks amazing.
So nice. It needed this a little bit. It hadn't changed much in years.
It did. Well, you know, Metafilter's a really interesting story of like how Google ranking really affects a business. I mean, Metafilter was running, was actually, they were a case study for Google AdSense. Like Google made them a case study, and there was the page on Google describing how great Metafilter did in terms of, you know, running Google Ads. And, you know, they made some changes to their algorithm. They started to, de-rank older pages. So Ask Metafilter, for example, is a fantastic resource, but there were threads that were old that were certainly content that was perfectly good, but the pages were just old or hadn't been updated in a while, and they got de-ranked, and their revenue took a big hit. So Matt had to had to size down his staff, and he did a donation push earlier this year, and they got back on their feet, and they did this beautiful redesign, which you can see. And I think they even launched a new TV centric Metafilter site. But it's doing well. It's on stable ground right now, and really, yeah, Fanfare. That's the new Metafilter site. All the Metafilter sites are great. I mean, this is a site that's been around. I mean, Matt was running Metafilter on a single box, like underneath his desk, back when he was working on Blogger, like in 1999. Like, this is an old school. He's always run it independently with a staff of moderators. All of these sites, you know, do read the comments. That, you know, none of these sites tolerate abusive behavior. There's fantastic conversations go on here.
I just love Metafilter. It's been so good for many years.
Such a great, well-moderated, fairly moderated, and ardently moderated community. It's fantastic. So we're really happy that they're in the bundle with us. And they're a fantastic site
So you'll be basically buying a supporting membership, which is great.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So you get it. So on Metafilter, each site you get a little something different. On Metafilter, you get a little, you know, I'm a supporting member badge on your account, so people can see that you help fund the site. And but through the bundle, you can get that at half the normal suggested donation, amount for a year.
Yeah.
This
is awesome. And this, the random thing is fun because it's their entire life of Metafilter. So there's stuff from, the year 2000.
It's crazy. Fun. It's been around, 14 years. Jeez, more than that, I think.
More than that, yeah.
Metafilter is really sort of amazing case study of like what, you know, a dude who started a first group blog, you know, could do, built an entire career and business.
I remember early back, earlier days, you know, he had existential crises at various points in the life of Metafilter and has kept going on with value added. It really is a great story, as you say, about how you can adapt to these changes.
He really has reckoned with some of the hardest, moments. I mean, I think there are a few moments of being shut down. He had offers, you know, to be bought, which he never did. He is the guru on great community, you know, moderation. And he struggled with ads, and he struggled with dealing with, you know, what a change to Google's algorithm can do to his business. And he's really come out on top, and it's an amazing community. It's really old school, amazing community.
And, you know, I can tell how much I like Metafilter because, unfortunately, I'm starting to read the article. It's like, I got to read that. That's a good one. All right. Anyway, that's so if you want to support a lot of really great stuff, the Good Web Bundle would be a great holiday gift. And if you already have a ThinkUp subscription as I do, you can give that that offer code to somebody else. Unbundle the bundle for $96.
Right, exactly. If you want only want two of the sites, you take the two you want, and you can give the other two away.
Yeah, that's nice. Mm-hmm. And you're supporting some really great sites. I was looking at Milkshake before the show. That's fun.
Yeah, Milkshake is really fun. Yeah. Milkshake is one of those undersung heroes.
I've never heard of
them. Know about it? Yeah, you haven't heard about it, right? It's made by a husband and wife team, Andre and Amber. It's just got so much personality and fun.
Awesome.
It's really well designed. And actually, Andre's at Slack now.
Neat.
Yeah, there's some great content there, and so we're really happy to team up with them as well.
I don't know.
We're losing Leo to Milkshake.
I love Milkshake. So Milkshake is like people put images up and share them. It's kind of like Pinterest for images, but it's got a kind of wicked sense of humor.
Yeah. You create a shake, and it's a stream of images, and the community that attracted just happens to be really big on animated GIFs and really kind of funny, quirky humorous images.
I'm going to buy this bundle because I've already that's three sites now I love. I got it. This is awesome, and a great site for discovery. So our show today brought to you by Prosper.com. That actually is a great. This is Silicon Valley's answer to going into the bank with a hat in hand for a loan, and you got to put on a tie and you got to look nice. And Prosper is a way to get money, to borrow money, without doing any of that. It's a peer-to-peer lending marketplace connecting people who are looking to borrow money with people who have money to lend. Such a great idea. If you go to prosper.com/twit right now, you'll be able to fill out a quick application and find out exactly how much money you can get. And what your rate will be. There aren't a lot of ways to borrow money when you need it. You could go to friends and family or a credit card. That's a bad idea. Or go to the bank. But now with a low fixed rate loan from Prosper.com, you can pay off those high rate credit cards. You can fix up your house for the holidays. You can put it into your business or start a business. Borrow up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days and use the money as you need. These are fixed rate loans, multi-year terms available. No collateral needed. They're personal loans. Prosper is an online marketplace connecting people who need money with those who want to invest. Don't rack up more debt on your credit cards this holiday season. Pay them off with Prosper.com. Check your rate without affecting your good credit. Go to Prosper.com/twit. And for a limited time, Prosper is offering Twit viewers a $50 Visa prepaid card when you get a loan. Prosper.com/twit. That's a special site just for you. Prosper.com/twit. Up to $35,000 in just 5 days, plus that $50 Visa prepaid card. It's waiting for you. Prosper.com/twit. And now it's time for the Google Changelog.
The Google Changelog.
Here's Gina Trapani with the latest from Google.
This is something I'm really excited about. I love Google Keep, a fantastic note-taking app with a fantastic widget, works on Android and the web. Well, one of the most requested features that they get for Keep just rolled out. You can now share notes and collaborate in real time on Keep Notes. This is really awesome, you guys. If you need to share a grocery list with your...
That's exactly what I want to use this for.
Yes, exactly.
And it checks it off as you're in the store buying stuff. Lisa will see that I got it.
Exactly. Very, very cool stuff.
Oh, man. You know, way back in the day, I worked with a German company that was going to do that on the web. This is going back 1999, and it was always a great idea, and now it's finally done.
Yeah, I make a to-do app, and there's tons of apps out there that let you collaborate, and there's note-taking apps, and there's list apps. I have to say, I love Keep because it's tied to your Google account. It's really lightweight. It lets you do. I actually use Evernote and Keep, but it's great just for collaborating without asking somebody. I mean, I guess you do have to download the Keep app, but you don't have to sign up. It's just really, really simple and easy and lightweight. You can add checkboxes, remove checkboxes. So the sharing collaboration is really, really nice. You can also filter your notes by color because you can change the notes to your color, whether or not they have images or audio, whether or not they're shared. So it's easier for you to sort out your notes and see the ones that you're sharing with your business coworkers or better half or whatever. So really nice. And it's got that reminder built in. Love Keep. I feel like Keep is one of Google's most undersung products, actually.
You're right.
A couple of other little nice upgrades. Google's search results on mobile now let you know if the site is mobile friendly. Okay, so if you do search, and you get your search results on your phone, on your mobile device, you'll see a little label that says mobile friendly if the site that it's linking to is mobile friendly, looks good on your
on a
small screen.
Does that mean it's a mobile site, or it's just if mobile responsive? Would that count?
Yeah, I think that responsive would count, and I would love to know the story behind how they're automatically detecting this.
Yeah,
actually, so yeah, it doesn't appear to be just sites that have like an mobile.whatever.com
because that's kind of not the modern web anymore nowadays.
That isn't the modern web, yeah. Right? The modern web is sites that are responsive and just change the screen. It does not appear to be that. So, really nice way to kind of choose what. What sites you go through based on whether or not they're going to look good on your phone. Similar change, weather is now in Google Maps. So I tried this out with a couple of places and got mixed results. I searched for London, England. I'm like in the screenshot there and I didn't see the weather, but then I searched for Brooklyn, New York and I did get the weather. Anyway, it's a little Google Now style card right below the place you search for that'll tell you what the weather is.
Nice.
There, so I can look at places in California and be jealous of how sunny and gorgeous it is there while I shiver here in Brooklyn. I think it was last week that I talked about, or 2 weeks ago, that I talked about how Google Search on mobile now has you can flip a coin, say, okay, Google, flip a coin, I'll flip a coin for you. There's a couple of other ones there. It didn't work, I think, when we tried it live on the show because we hadn't gotten the update yet. It does work for me now, Leo, probably still does for you. Does for you as well.
Oh, good.
There's also roll a die. So Google will roll a six-sided die for you.
Oh, they will. Oh, good.
They will.
Not a 20-sided, though. I can't. No.
I wonder. I didn't try roll a 20-sided die. We should maybe try that.
Okay,
it's six
Google.
By default.
Let me see if we can. Roll a 20-sided die. Hello?
Oh, it deactivated.
Roll a 20. Okay, Google. Oh, shut up. My timing is everything. Roll a 20-sided die. No.
Oh,
shoot.
So close. I was so sure that was going to work.
Roll a die. Maybe, I'm using a Galaxy Note. Maybe that Google's just not up to date on that. I don't know what's going on now.
Ooh, it's translating.
Thinking. Can't reach Google
at the
moment.
Whoa.
I hate it when that happens. Roll a die. I don't like to say
No, it didn't work. You mustn't have gotten the update. Sorry about that. See, I did the same thing I did to you last week. The other thing that you could do, Game of Thrones fans, just Google Hodor. It'll talk back to you.
I love that.
Hodor.
Is it working this week? We tried last week. It didn't work.
It did. It worked for me this time around.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. See, now my watch is listening. So confusing. Help me, Obi-Wan. And then the phone gets kind of snarky and says, you shouldn't be talking to me while your watch is listening. Huh. Okay, there you go. Hodor. Hodor, Hodor, Hodor. Hodor, Hodor. Love Hodor. And then Hodor?
Anyway, so I'm a sucker for these Easter eggs. These are ways to impress your friends and family at Thanksgiving, folks. So there you go. Google tricks. For Turkey Day.
Who's Hodor? What's Hodor? What are you talking about, Hodor?
That's all I got.
And that's the Google change log. Hodor! That's going to, I think that that Hodor thing, people aren't going to know what that means in a few years.
It's probably a fleeting. Do they still have the Klingon? I think they probably still have Google and Klingon. That's another one that's just kind of nerdy fun. Yeah, yeah.
Hodor, for those who don't know, is a character in Game of Thrones that can say but one thing, and that thing is Hodor. It's also his name.
They should do it for Groot.
Groot, same thing. I am Groot. That's all he can say. But he says it in such expressive way, you know what he's talking about. By the way, Ingress is 2 years old.
Whoa, time flies.
I know. Remember we were all like, I want to get an invite. I want to play Ingress. Several of our staffers play Ingress and log miles playing the thing. It's crazy. In fact, here's the infographic. Hypothesis, Google GPS-based game, cracking the code on healthier lifestyle, urban exploration and discovery. 200-plus countries, 64 million resonators deployed. That's part of the game, is deploying resonators. 178 million portals visited. That's, are the portals all geographic locations? They must be, right? 52,000 event attendance, 127 million kilometers walked. Ingress, as you play it, logs your distance traveled. So that's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is pretty great. Good for them.
Oh, I get it. 3 million portals created, 178 million visited.
I'm even more overwhelmed by the thought of playing Ingress now than I was 2 years ago when it was introduced. It seems like a world that I just don't know that I'm willing to commit to.
That's what happens, you know. True. If you got in at the beginning, it wouldn't be so. But, you know, Jeff Needles plays it, and he walks miles.
Yeah, Padre.
Padre plays it. It's really kind of when we first saw this, we surmised it was some sort of Google plan to gather location information. In fact, I think it was a Google plan to get everybody walking. Love it.
Or so they want us to think.
Yeah, who knows what they're up to.
What was the net effect of the Niantic project? We had crossed a threshold. Global security could be at risk.
Ingress is not a game.
Encrypting the data was the mistake.
Enlightening.
This is not psychosis or some cognitive break, but an actual...
So Niantic Labs, which created this, is inside Google, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this 20% project, or is this an actual... What is this, a business?
Not only attracts people, but attracts events.
I don't know what's going on with my sound. It's kind
of... ...is to monitor the effects of mind hacking. Obviously, this will be done with the highest of security.
To make it's sure really a neat idea.
Not contaminate or threaten.
It is. I found it a little too all-consuming to play, but...
It is all-consuming.
People love it. I got places to go. Walking around. It wasn't my thing, but I totally get it. And I love that people love it. And
if I lived in a city like you do, I would really be more likely to use it. The problem is.
Yeah. And in fact, I should revisit it now that I'm here in Brooklyn because I found that being in San Diego, which is not nearly the sort of, or the area that I was in is not nearly as walkable as here. It was not easy to play.
Dot Get Glass in our chat room points out that Niantic is also the group that did Field Trip,
which
is a similar idea. But as Field Trip will give you narration as you wander your town about sites of interest, which is a great idea.
Yeah, I had to turn off Field Trip in New York because it buzzed so much.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, every other block was something had been filmed or was some sort of historical.
Yeah, there's about five in Petaluma that kept coming up.
Leo Laporte's here. Leo Laporte's there.
Yeah.
Leo Laporte stopped here.
Did you know that Finding the Abbots was shot here in 1987? Relative Wave. They do a Mac app called Form, an interaction design and prototyping app. It was just acquired by Google. It's an $80 app design tool, and Google is now going to give it away. Oh. That's pretty very interesting news. I haven't used Form. It's for designers and developers. It doesn't make an app, but it lets you design an app. Does that make sense?
Right. So the user interface. So you can lay out your screens and put down your buttons and your drop downs. And
it's certainly the first stage to making an app. It just doesn't let you put code in there. It's IA, right?
Yeah. And contrary to popular belief, that's the hardest part. Getting that right is the hardest part. Writing the code is just filling in the blanks.
We're doing it right now for our new the new Twit website. Fascinating.
You're doing all JavaScript APIs, and Node, and so the front end's going to be like a client that consumes the JSON. It sounds amazing.
It's true. Yeah. No, it just makes me cry to think of it. So what we're doing, we are Drupal right now. If you go to twit.tv, it's a Drupal website. We are not abandoning Drupal. What we're going to do is what they call headless Drupal. So the Drupal will maintain a MySQL database with all the information about shows and hosts and everything else. But instead of being responsible for display on the screen, as a traditional Drupal site is, Drupal is a really robust, nice content management system, but its displays don't look super up-to-date. It's a lot of work to get it to look really cool and neat. So the company that we're working with in Austin, they're called Four Kitchens. They suggest, and they've done this for a couple of other companies. The Tonight Show website has done this way for NBC. It's headless Drupal. So they still use Drupal, but Drupal is now an API. And one of the consumers, but not the only consumer of the API, is a website that's written in Node.js. So, yeah, just as you said, the website is actually just a JavaScript entity that is doing calls to the API saying, okay, well, what's the name of the show? What's the picture? What's the video? Whatever. And putting it up on the website. So it's kind of
I approve
too. It feels modern. It feels modern.
Yeah, that sounds
and the reason we did this is because we realized that the web is not so important as it used to be. That really we see our consumers, most of the consumers of our content doing it on mobile. So what we want to do is have an API that can be consumed by a variety of things. A website is just one. A mobile app would be another. And we're going to make a public API so that if you'd like to write a little Ruby or Python or something, you'll be able to write a little app if you want, because the API is public and freely available. So you'll be able to query. You know, right now there is an API in effect to all podcasts. It's the RSS feed, but this is going to go so much more beyond that.
Yeah, it's so limited, right? Oh, that's great. That's awesome, Leo.
Crazy.
In some ways, designing an API can be hard, that's great.
I'm excited, the Four Kitchens guys are great. Gals and guys are great, and we're doing the internet. So there's two phases of the development. There's the API development, the Drupal development, and then there's the UI for the website development. So we're in the middle of the information architecture, the IA, for the website right now with the designers.
Right, because that's really going to define your API, right? You want to design from the outside.
It's
in.
A two-way street. So we also talk to app developers. We also talk, you know, what would an API, what should an API have? In fact, we consume it internally. We have a program we use called Elroy that is the generator of the content and the feeds and stuff. So the editor, when he finishes editing the show, he creates a mezzanine file, which is a high-quality file, which he then gives Elroy, and he puts all the metadata in Elroy. That's going to start moving to Drupal, but he then feeds that to Elroy, and Elroy churns and makes all the different versions, uploads it to YouTube and the CDN. It posts the feed, creates the feed, and posts it, and does all this stuff automatically. So Elroy will also be a consumer of the API.
Very nice. That's exciting.
It seems like the right way to do it.
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
One of those things where it seemed like a good idea at the time. you say if you're so, we'll see if we're sold in a year. It's definitely the right way to do it. And it's
modularity.
What it all came from is that the web moves so fast you can no longer, you don't want to do a redesign every 6 months or a year. It's too expensive.
It makes a lot of sense to separate the front end from the back end, right? Yeah. And have clients and it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it makes sense in my mind.
Is this a news flash? I just saw a tweet that Firefox is a renewal of Google as default worldwide search came up. And in the U.S., it's going to be Yahoo search, Russia, next, Baidu.
That's a huge story.
Wow.
And I'll tell you why that's a huge story. Because Mozilla, the nonprofit open source foundation that does Firefox, makes millions every year from Google. Tens of millions.
How does this work, I wonder?
So, and the reason is because that's the default search in that little search window, or actually it'll be in the awesome bar. That's that's where you go. And those search results, Google gives a cut of money made from those search results to Mozilla. And that's been what's kept the foundation going. So that's a shocker.
It is.
Well, Yahoo must be paying them as much, no? I mean, for them to leave.
I guess that's where.
Maybe more.
Well, the cash is going from. Yeah,
maybe more. You know, Firefox seems to be moving in the direction of being the privacy browser. You know, just as Apple is distinguishing itself from Android by saying, well, we care about your privacy, Google doesn't. Firefox lately seems to be doing the same. And so it makes sense they might move away from Google. Not that Yahoo is in any way going to protect your privacy, but.
I kind of expected DuckDuckGo to announce something with Firefox.
Well, one of the things Firefox did do yesterday in the latest version is make DuckDuckGo an easy choice. Mm-hmm. In their search. It's one of the default searches.
Yep, that makes sense.
Yep. So, that is a breaking story. Big story.
The other story I find fascinating, if I may, is the Google project that auto-captions photos. Did you see that one in the rundown?
How do they know?
It's like one of the photos is two dogs running.
Oh. Isn't this the beginning of Skynet, really?
It's pretty amazing. If they can start to interpret images, look at some of those examples.
Two young hockey players fighting
over the puck. Well, that you can pretty much say on anybody who has a mask on.
Now, can I get this, or is this something internal only?
This is a project right now. It's just a project, but this is pretty phenomenal that this kind of recognition and of images and translation into searchable, analyzable, findable text. A herd of elephants walking across a dry grass field.
Yeah, that's some smarts. I mean, so they're turning the knowledge graph inside out, right? They're showing us.
Hat with a wide brim, dog. Dog wearing hat with a wide brim would be the, wow. That's pretty impressive.
Here's the one. The group of people shopping at an outdoor market. There are many vegetables at the fruit stand.
So you're like at a four-year-old level.
Yeah, wow. But geez.
That's impressive.
Really impressive.
This is amazing.
Yeah, this is a research paper, but wow.
I'm about tapping this into Google Glass or something like that for accessibility.
For the first time in a year?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was thinking about the other day. I went to the Barnes & Noble and ended up going to the men's room. I'm sure you're glad you know that. And I saw the Braille on the door. And I'm thinking, you know, how does the blind person find the damn door to do the Braille? And I'm thinking, well, there's no reason you couldn't have a map of the store and directions in the store and audio directions to say 20 steps forward, 2 to the right, there's the men's room. Right? You start to map out the world in these ways. Phenomenal things can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, or Forbin. Colossus, the Forbin Project. It could go either way.
I like the examples that are completely wrong. So there's a photo of a parking sign, and it's a refrigerator filled with lots of food and drinks.
Close enough. Close enough.
Where the dog is catching the frisbee.
The yellow school bus parked in a parking lot. That's actually not too far off. The refrigerator is the worst one here. The other one is fabulous. A dog catching a frisbee. Yeah.
You can see how it might make that mistake.
The dog isn't even jumping in that picture. For those of you listening on audio, we're just looking at fairly simple pictures and misinterpretations. But it's still phenomenal.
It is. That's amazing.
I'm going to download this. I can be an actress. I can be a computer engineer for my Kindle right now.
Is that the Barb?
Yeah. Book? So Gizmodo published this yesterday, and already that's what we were seeing on Milkshake. I couldn't figure out why on Milkshake I was seeing all these Barbie images. Apparently, there's a book you can buy. Barbie.
It's on the rundown. Yeah.
Is it? Barbie.
You got it. There's a Gizmodo.
Barbie, I can be a computer engineer.
And God bless. God bless. Let's
just take a look at breakfast one morning. Barbie's already hard at work on our laptop. What are you doing, Barbie? Asks Skipper. I'm designing a game that shows kids how computers work, explains Barbie. You can make a robot puppy do cute tricks by matching up colored blocks. Okay, not so bad. Your robot puppy is sweet, says Skipper. Can I play your game? Oh, I'm only creating the design ideas, Barbie says, laughing. I'll need Steven and Brian's help to turn it into a real game.
God, help us all.
Oh, it gets worse. Barbie tries to email her design to Steven, but suddenly her screen starts blinking.
Is this real or is this the jokes?
This is real.
Oh, no.
That's weird, says Barbie. Barbie and Skipper try to reboot the computer, but nothing happens. Looks like you've got a virus, big sister, says Skipper. Luckily, I wear my flash drive on a necklace, so I'll always remember to back up my work, replies Barbie. When Barbie puts her flash drive into Skipper's laptop, the screen starts blinking. Oh, no, says Barbie. The virus must be on the flash drive. I forgot to back up my homework assignment, cries Skipper, and all my music files are lost, too. Fortunately, and by the way, then she playfully hits Barbie with a pillow, because that's always fun when girls have pillow fights. Barbie makes it to computer class just before the bell rings. As soon as the class begins, Barbie raises her hand. Yes, Barbie? asks Ms. Smith, the teacher. If your computer gets a virus and crashes, how can you retrieve all the files you lost? Asks Barbie. And then Ms. Smith gives it a fairly good answer. Not so bad. Remove the hard drive. But let's go talk to Steven and Brian, the geeks. Hi, guys, says Barbie. I tried to send my designs, but I ended up crashing my laptop and Skipper's, too. I need to get back the lost files and repair both of our laptops.
It'll go faster if Brian and I help, offers Steven. By the way, you want to take a ride in my Uber?
Great, says Barbie. Steven, can you hook up Skipper's hard drive to the library computer?
Sure, says Steven. The library computer has excellent security software to protect it.
Anyway, so that's the meme now, is to take these...
If you go to the rundown, last thing under other, it's make your own Barbie computer. So Bean has to get off.
Thank God for Brian and Skipper. That's all I can say because Barbie.
Brian and Steven.
Brian and
Steven.
You know,
I didn't read that story. I saw it a few times. I avoided it because I'm so worried that Barbie is like inevitably in my future. Like that, we're gonna have to reckon with Barbie.
You know,
in
to
my
be
house.
Fair, as bad as this is, it could be worse. I mean, Ms. Smith is the female teacher is smart and knows a little bit about computers and at computer class. You know, Barbie presents the game she designed. Ms. Smith is so impressed that she gives Barbara extra credit. Barbie's terrific computer skills have saved the day for both sisters. I guess I can be a computer engineer, says Barbie happily.
So she discovers it doesn't need.
It's about what you'd expect. The only thing that's really bad is when she says, "I'm not designing the game. I'm just drawing the designs. I need Steven and Brian's help to turn it into a real game." That's where maybe you could have left that line out.
I mean, what were they thinking? It could be worse. Listen, I'm never going to look to Barbie for a progressive take on.
Where you're going to be, Gina? Where I used to go. Is American Girl.
That is another aspect of...
I loved American Girl. That was not too bad.
It was not too bad at all. Some of the stories are actually very good.
No, American Girl was fine. And Abby and I went to Chicago to the American Girl's doll museum. And we had tea. They have a little chair at the table for your doll and her tea. Oh, yeah. And the stories are, I think, pretty... Now, I'll have to think back. Pretty empowering. They're all about... young women in history going and so a bunch of historic periods and it's I think they're all powerful and good, right?
Pretty much, yeah. No, they're okay, Gina. Really, the stories are okay.
An example of the internet's response to Barbie. So Barbie's sitting at the computer, Skipper is pouring. Instead of saying, "Oh no, I'm just designing it, I'm gonna ask the boys to do the work," she says, "Pour mine with an extra espresso shot, sis. Some scrub decided to link directly to Atlas instead of generic Blast and Lopak. So now I have to write patches to get this BS to link against accelerate.framework instead. I am not about to pollute /user/local/lib with a bunch of stupid dependencies. This awful shared library model is why Linux can't have nice things. Now that's my Barbie.
That is awesome.
That's my Barbie.
That's what I'm going to do with that. In these situations, we're going to rewrite the story. All right, let's take the panels and hack it.
You just get to do that because she can't read yet. Yeah. So you just read it to her this way.
You have no idea. I change the words. My wife laughs and laughs. Every line about the girl loving hot pink, I'm like, oh, I really hate hot pink. I change the words. I say mama and mommy. I love to riff on kids' books.
So if you all of a sudden see a lot of Barbie and computers in your meme feed, that's where that's coming from.
And the response
has been pretty darn excellent.
I'm going to have her publish her own books. That's what I'm
going
to
do. There you go.
Yeah.
Give her a copy of Vellum. Let her have at it.
Get nuts.
The Oral History of the Poop Emoji by Fast Company. Nice reading. Did you put this in here?
No, I did not. I wouldn't do that.
Sorry about that, Leo.
This is important journalism.
Yeah. It said the word Google, and I was like, okay.
There's a Google story.
Yeah, there we go.
The Poomoji.
Poomoji.
It's good. It's good for
It's a history of emojis and et cetera, et cetera.
If you go up three, the compilation of videos about the internet from the 80s and 90s.
Oh, yeah. We've played some of those on our show. Yeah.
Okay, they're great.
They're hysterical. And in fact, I'm guilty for some of these because I, of course, did a PBS show called The Internet! Which I tried to explain.
Yeah, the other good video is the, and I don't know if this is completely.
These are all from Andy Bio. This is Andy Bio's channel on the.
Andy Bio's, yes. It's a great, great list.
I want to see Steve Allen and Jane Meadows computer video from 1984. What the what? This is the VHS era internet.
Don't you love the graphics?
Computability. Starring Steve Allen, which most of our audience never heard of, and Jane Meadows. Index.
The Computability Home cassette has been indexed with a color code for your convenience. The introduction.
Oh, I gotta jump ahead a little bit. Let's just see some hacker.
Who eats, drinks, and sleeps computers. Now, a hacker would definitely own a modem. This is a device that changes the electronic impulses in the computer into sounds that can be carried over a telephone line. Very useful for communicating with other computers, data banks, information services, etc. As you'll see. Tape drives are much slower than the disk type because they store the data sequentially.
I love
like
her
music.
Faux British accent.
Other terms, most of which you'll never need. You'll pick up a lot of them the more you work with your
kids.
Computer,
actresses
remember,
in the 30s and 40s often affected British accents, even though they were from the Bronx.
Because learning a lot of new words can be
and what's with the hair?
But I guarantee in a few weeks you'll be using these terms as easily as counting from 1 to 10.
I have no idea what any of them mean, but I'm reading the teleprompter well.
But you know what? I have to say, I love Steve Allen and Jane Meadows, so I'm going to watch this.
Anyway, why don't we switch our
look at his hair. I think his hair is higher than hers.
A few chips and see what comes up on the old CRT.
This is just what he's like at home.
James, that was the early J-Lo.
We're going to show you some multitude of things a computer of reasonable
Steve Allen invented the Tonight Show, practically. Many of the jokes that you see people like Letterman and even Fallon do now. We're started by Steve Allen. All right, let's do a commercial. Unless you see one more story, if you find something you want, the poop emoji grabbed me.
I thought it might. Yeah.
I thought it might, yeah. This is good news. We talked about this on Security Now. WhatsApp is going to add end-to-end encryption from the open source text secure messaging system. That's from Open Whisper Systems. That is a really strong encryption, strong solution. Of course, as soon as it's within WhatsApp, maybe you don't know exactly how they implement it, but I think this is really great news. And it shows that Facebook, I think Facebook's kind of thinking, along with these other big companies, Google and Apple and Microsoft, how can we get out from under the NSA?
Let's not forget that the bill to restrict the NSA was defeated yesterday.
Failed.
So
yeah. It's one of those weird votes. They needed a supermajority because it was a vote to debate. And so they needed 60 votes. They only got 50.
That's how your government works.
Or not. That's the case, maybe. All right. Let's wrap this up. I think we got all the big stories in here. And we're going to get your tip and number and tool of the week in just a minute. But first, a word from Squarespace. That's my tip of the week. Get your website. Hie thee over to squarespace.com, the best website hosting and content management system all in one. We were talking about Google and the search results letting you know whether a site is mobile friendly. All Squarespace sites are automatically mobile friendly because their templates are all mobile responsive. That means the design looks great no matter what size screen. You don't even have to think about it. Start with 25, actually more. They keep adding new templates, beautiful templates. Many of them designed for specific categories like musicians, or artists, or architects, or chefs. That gives you a great starting point. The band template, Horizon, for instance, has a tour dates page, a music player, and a merchandise store. In fact, all the Squarespace templates are e-commerce enabled, which is nice. Even if you just want to do a wedding registry, all cash wedding registry, or donations for a school, library. Squarespace 7 is new, and it really adds some nice features, including the ability to live edit on a single screen so you don't have to go back and forth between preview and site manager. You can even preview designs in device mode, so you'll see how your design will look on a tablet or a mobile device. You get instant access to professional stock photography from Getty. Instant branded email setup with Google Apps. And the new developer platform is so sweet. If you are a guru of web design, if you're a JavaScript or CSS or HTML user, you'll love the dev platform with the color-coded syntax and all. Easy to use, but if you need help, 24/7 support from their offices, live chat and email, 7 plus self-help articles, video workshops, and their newly redesigned help portal. It's really great. And all this, $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name when you sign up for a year. But better than that, if you just visit squarespace.com and click the Get Started button, you can just set up a site right now. Play with all the tools, even import your existing content. And you'll see how easy it is to change the template without changing the content. It's just, it's exactly modern, state-of-the-art web design and hosting. You're going to love it. Start that free two-week trial. You don't need to give them a credit card. If you decide to buy, all I ask is you use our offer code TWIG, T-W-I-G, and that way you get 10% off. And you tell them you heard it on This Week in Google. If you are an existing Squarespace 7 customer, by the way, I'm sorry, if you're a Squarespace 6 customer, you can turn on 7 if you go to the settings tab and click activate. That way you'll get all the new features. Squarespace.com, click the Get Started button. Use the offer code TWIG to save 10%. We thank them so much. They have been long-term supporters of this show and all of our network, and we're happy to say we'll be back with us, as almost all of our sponsors will, in 2015. We're starting to sign up people for next year. Lots of interest, I'm glad to say. Let us get your tip of the week, Gina Trapani.
So I must get asked a couple of times a week, it feels like, for advice from listeners from the shows or just online in general. You know, I want to learn how to program. Where should I start? What languages should I use? You know, where do I start? And that's a really hard thing to hard question to answer, especially in a tweet. But I suspect that a lot of young people, especially young people, but lots of people want a job at Google. And Google has actually, Google for Education anyway, has published a list of a guide for technical development, a suggested list of courses and subjects for people, for aspiring software engineers to teach themselves. This doesn't, of course, guarantee a job at Google, but these are really good recommendations, academic recommendations and non-academic recommendations. So if you're a student in school and you want to teach yourself or not, some really good stuff here. They're all links to third-party courses, some on Coursera, some from the various universities, on, you know, what Google thinks is worth learning. So you got your introduction to computer science course, programming in at least one object-oriented programming language. This is pretty, this is skewed very Google. So Google uses Java and Python primarily. So they, of course, recommend learning C++, Java, or Python. Then, of course, all the languages of the web, JavaScript, CSS, HTML. But some really, really great stuff here on debugging and testing and artificial intelligence and building compilers and cryptography. Awesome resource here. So if you're really interested in learning and becoming a programmer or becoming a software engineer or you know, starting a new career in that, I think this is actually a really good place to start. It's Google's Guide for Technical Development. I'm sure that if you Google that, it'll be the first thing that comes up.
That's neat.
Yeah, I thought it was a helpful way. And I mean, there's so many resources out there to teach yourself. You know, some you know, sponsors of these shows and Code Academy and lots of different things. It's hard to know where to start, and I feel like this is a good starting point.
Absolutely. Jeff, your number of the week.
Well, I think I'll take this one. Flurry, owned by Yahoo, has done an analysis to show that time spent on mobile devices now exceeds time spent on television.
Wow.
Mobile is the first screen. That's a pretty big deal.
Wow. So how many hours a day?
2 hours and 57 minutes a day versus 2 hours and 48 minutes daily on TV, according to the U.S. Department Bureau of Labor Statistics. Or on labor statistics, I guess, in this case.
Bureau of Labor Statistics measures time on TV and mobile? Interesting.
With so many people unemployed these days, it's really important to know.
I love this. So if you click on the link to the BLS, watching TV, 2.0 hours a day, relaxing and thinking, 18 minutes a day.
Oh, there you go.
That's the problem. Only think along with relax 18 minutes a day. There's the problem.
How do you even measure that? Who knows? How much time do I spend thinking? I think they don't mean thinking. I think they mean on the can. But that's just a thought.
Reading 19 minutes a day.
Oh.
But if you're on your computer, you're reading.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Reading paper is separate than reading on the screen?
apparently.
Mm. You know, that's not real reading, Gina.
That's an interesting point, though. We probably now read more than ever before, thanks to the web.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
No doubt. No doubt.
I read a lot of articles, a lot of stuff online. I read probably a magazine's worth every day.
I'd opt to read a user interface of an app before talk to an actual human any day.
Yeah, come to think of it. Well, here's one more app that'll keep you on your phone. We were talking about Uniqlo. Tony Wang messaged me and said, my favorite Uniqlo product is their Wake Me app. Let me show you the website.
This you're kidding me.
Yeah, look at this. It's Uniqlo Wake Up. I think the app is uniqlo.com/wakeup. And it wakes you up with music appropriate to the day's weather.
Ian, on Friday, today is a...
This is very day. Japanese.
Super Japanese.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Good
morning. All right, I'm going to set this up.
My phone and throw it out the window.
Good morning, Jeff. Today is a Uniqlo day. They have other apps, by the way. You can design a Uniqlo t-shirt on your phone and whatever. This is for iOS and Android. Uniqlo Wake Up, it's called. Let me set it up because I just downloaded it for the... Oh, network error. I'm having trouble with this phone. It seems this is a Galaxy Note 4, and it seems to be confused about the network, the Wi-Fi. Wow. I see a network here. I don't understand. Maybe I'll turn off the... I'll go to the mobile network. Maybe that'll make it work better. Uniqlo Wake Up. Hello. Wake up with music that changes with the weather. Share the start of your day. Should I have it in English, Mandarin, or none? I'm going to have English, Fahrenheit. I don't think I'll share this with Renren or Weibo. Maybe Facebook or Twitter. You can tell it's a Chinese app. And now I guess it's going to get the weather forecast. How interesting. The page brings you the latest Uniqlo wake-up news. Apparently there is none. It's got a little clock. I could set the alarm. Should set an alarm. I have to do this up here. Set an alarm for now. Yeah, there you go. World time. Starting to wake me up. Let's go back. I want to wake up. Wake me up again. Let's add another alarm. Let's make this 5:14. Save. That was kind of pretty music, though.
Yeah.
Tony says he loves this. It's free.
I like it.
Uniqlo, Uniqlo, wake up with music that changes the weather. And then I guess you can share the stars. See, she's sleeping with her phone. And she's looking out the window. So maybe she's going to share.
On Friday, today is a sunny day.
Oh, Lord. This was on the Android app arena? So
this was Ron's pick, I believe, a while ago.
I hope you
walked
him.
A while back. We had a good bit about it, actually, if I remember correctly. How could you not?
Sunny day.
Oh.
Hello. It's 3:14 p.m. On Wednesday. Today is a cloudy day.
Oh, Jesus, I was...
Hello.
It's going to keep going.
14 p.m. On Wednesday, today is a cloudy day.
Makes you want to just use the poop emoji, doesn't
Hello.
It? All right. There you go. Tony Wang's tool of
Thanks
the
so much, Tony.
Good
Tony,
job,
are
Tony.
You are you wearing
a Uniqlo shirt? Yeah, I bet he is. I bet he is. Hey, Jeff, did anything come while we were doing the show? Did you check the...
Nope. I've been checking the app. I checked the doors for an earlier commercial break, but did nothing.
All right. Okay. We're both waiting for our Nexus 6. It's a race. Gina Trapani is at ThinkUp. Don't forget, you can take advantage of a special bundle right now. If you want to get ThinkUp along with some other great stuff, what's the URL for that again?
Goodwebbundle.com. It's a good gift.
The Good Web Bundle. Goodwebbundle.com.
Yeah, thanks, Leo.
Thank you,
Gina.
A
lot of fun today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oops, I'm actually not on that site. I am using, though, that really great Google extension that shows beautiful land masses on my new tab.
I know. I kept it on mine, too. I love it.
I can't live without
it. I just absolutely love it.
And by the way, it changes all the time. There's always fresh stuff.
Yeah.
Well, but it also, it does recycle some.
Some.
I see some repeats.
Well, yeah, but I think that that might be within a short period of time because I haven't seen any of these before.
I've seen some a couple days before, but it still is magnificent.
It's really beautiful.
My problem is I'll open a new tab and go do something, and then I want to hit the back button to see what I just
yeah.
Let me get that tab again.
I get distracted, like, oh, what was I doing? Where is that place? You know,
we live in a beautiful planet, don't we?
We do.
It's a beautiful world. Just a gorgeous world.
I wonder how they select these images.
They probably have an algorithm.
I'm sure that there's some bot who's like, this is visually interesting.
This is visually interesting. Let us see if we should, I bet you, if the number of, there's an algorithm about the number of colors, the shapes.
There is.
There's something.
This is pleasing to the human eye. Here's a dog jumping for a ball.
My humans would enjoy this refrigerator full of food.
Yes, my human overlords would get distracted by this photo.
This will calm them down as I take over their lives.
Just a matter of time. Skynet is coming. Jeff Jarvis is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York. He's the best. His new book is out. Geeks Bearing Gifts, Managing New Futures for News, and you can find that on Amazon.
It's pretty damn wonky, folks.
No. This is exactly the question I was talking about earlier.
There it is.
We need to solve this problem so that we can know what's true. I despair of that, but we'll see. Thank you, everybody, for being here. It is every Wednesday at 1 p.m. that we do this show. That's Pacific time, Pacific Standard Time. We do it at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 2100 UTC. Live on twit.tv. After the fact, you can get audio and video of the show from twit.tv/twig or from our youtube.com/thisweekingGoogle or from whatever podcast app you like. There are a lot of them, including Stitcher and Instacast and Slacker and the app named Podcast on your phone. I use a Dog Catcher on Android, like that a lot.
Nice. Still using that.
Yeah,
huh?
It's really good. Pocket Cast is good. What do you use?
Yeah, Pocket Cast.
Pocket Cast.
Yeah,
Pocket Cast.
Pocket Cast. Me too.
You switched too, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe I ought to switch. Yeah. I don't know. Just anything that downloads a show that I can listen to or watch later.
Yeah, totally.
I
mean, they all do that. So
yeah. There's a Twit app. Podcast. I recommend that.
Yeah. I think a podcast does the syncing across devices. That's what I really like. It remembers where you are and stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because that's one of the things we're talking about in the API is the ability to save user state so that we know where you stopped watching or listening to a show so that when you use something else, it'll say, would you like to start where you left off?
Ooh.
Non-trivial.
Non-trivial at all. That's some advanced stuff there, Leo. Good for you, but watch out for scope creep.
Yeah, well, you know what? Oh, and someday we'll talk about this. Four Kitchens is very agile. I mean, like, dogmatically agile.
Yep.
And so we use scrums. We use that whole points technique to assign points. We have a backlog. We groom the backlog. I'm learning all these weird, scrummy
burn down charts.
Yeah, all of that
storyboards.
Stuff.
Storyboards.
Yeah.
Yep.
User stories. We have we came up with hundreds of user stories. You know what? It would be a very interesting special to do sometime. So have you used this methodology?
I have. I'm not a zealot, and I haven't used the more advanced stuff. But I do. I'm a big fan of burn down charts, just as a way to assess how much work and estimating and breaking down tasks and changing the burn. And stand up. So I'm sort of light. I find these methodologies super super interesting, and I learn. I'm kind of it's like cafeteria Catholic. I'm a cafeteria agile.
Working with the Pope. Let me tell you, of agile.
You're working with the Pope. Yeah.
Holy cow.
I'm personally always a little wary of the kind of the folks that are like one true way. I must do it exactly. But I think it does work. I mean, if you have a development shop that's just committed to the methodology and that's the language they speak and it works for everyone, that's great. I've never been on a team where everyone was fully on board and fully committed. So it's always been kind of piecemeal for me.
Yeah, no, this is pretty serious. We have a certified scrum master. Paul Benjamin is running this thing like clockwork.
Oh. We have a
scrum master. We have stand-ups every day.
Nice.
Yeah, we get spanked if we don't show up. It's really good so far. It is process heavy at the beginning, and so there's some debate over how much process. We're going to spend a lot of money on process right now. But I think that this is what you have to do to make sure that we, as the project owners, get our needs heard. Yes. And the developers understand the job that they need to do. That's the hardest thing, I think, in software development. So
yeah, there's a lot of value, I think, to formalizing that, especially if you're working with a third party. I think that's great. Yeah. I would love to see that special.
Okay. When the Four Kitchens people come here, maybe we'll do it.
The making of.
The making of. It's driving certain of us crazy.
Wait, now, so I want to hear more about that.
That'll have to be an offline conversation. I understand how much geeks love process, and sometimes to the point where we love process rather than doing anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, you ever used the getting things done methodology. Many a geek has done 43 folders and set it all up just so, but never gets anything done. But, man, they have a system. And so I always want to temper the love of the system with an actual desire to get work done. But I think it's getting done. And if I tell you what, we'll know at the end. If you like the new Twit site, then it will have worked.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We do use software that supports Scrum. We're using Atlassian, Jira, of course, one of our sponsors. Actually, Four Kitchens has always used Jira, so that was no problem. We use we have our own HipChat chat channel at all times, and it's really Jira is amazing. Jira really is all about, you know, the agile experience.
Yeah, if you're using a tool that's geared for a particular methodology, that's great. Yeah.
A couple of people in the chat room are familiar with this. One of them says, all projects with Scrum feel process heavy at first, but it pays off big time in the end. That's
what they always say.
That's what they always say, isn't it? You're going to love the result. Well, the proof is in the pudding. We'll see. Anyway, thank you for being here. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Gina. We love you. And thanks to you for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.